hospital for months as a shortage of community beds and bureaucratic delays stall their exit. For X-Ray FM, I'm Hannah Francis.
You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland at 91.1 FM, K296 FT West Haven serving Portland at 107.1 FM, and K219 KU Nehalem serving Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming live and archived at xray.fm, where radio is yours.
The views and opinions expressed during the X-Ray AM morning show belong to us, the hosts, and do not represent the official policies or positions of X-Ray FM. Any content provided by the DJs and commentators are not intended to offend any specific demographic, including religious groups, ethnic and cultural identities, club, organization, company, or individuals.
Welcome back to the Commons, folks. This is your Monday morning radio guide to news, culture, and local action. Start your week informed with stories that matter to you and your neighbors, spotlighting people and events shaping Portland's future environmentally, socially, and economically.
With a focus on direct action, union organizing, and the thriving local arts scene, we're here to help you play the cards in your hand and make a difference, whether you're tuning in for the news, the music, or the Opportunity Act.
The Commons is where the Portland gathers. It is 8:01 on Monday, April 6th. Let's go. We are your hosts. I'm Julia Moore.
And I'm Hannah Francis.
And, yo, the weather is hot. It is hot, hot, hot. I even put my cactus outside, which is pretty crazy.
Whoa. For dangerous.
For April. You know, I've been, you know, chanting April showers bring May flowers because I want my flowers, but I'm like, apparently April desert brings cactus outside. It's currently what's happening.
Yeah, you gotta find the silver lining in the climate apocalypse world.
Woo.
Well, at least I can bring my cactus outside.
Honestly, yeah,
it's like, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that song. I think it's by Postal Service. It's like the one that's like, Now we can swim any day in November. Mm-hmm. You know, it's talking about climate change.
Yeah.
It's like pretty awful, but it's kind of ironic and funny to have like heard that song when I was very young and then like grown up with it and like just seen it become more and more true.
Yes. You know, climate catastrophe is terrifying and things keep getting warmer and there is you know, corporations that are using, you know, this, like, honestly, the chaos of our global situation to gain more of a foothold in the global economy and perpetuate climate disaster. But news, folks, collectively working on a local level makes a world of difference. So tuning into things like X-Ray, taking local action in your government, are all pieces you can put together and resist locally. That honestly makes the big guys kind of quake because local government just expands. You know, if we're able to actually be connected and have influence our local government, maybe then we can do state. Maybe then we can do the Northwest region. Who knows? There's a world of possibility.
Yeah, I also think, I was having a conversation with someone recently about, like, how things can't, like, we have, like, much more grounds to stand on when we have, like, local government kind of behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of people actually don't feel that way still. A lot of people feel like our government is not really behind us and that...
The local government you're talking about?
Yeah. And just that, like... You know, I mean, yeah, of course it's nuanced. It is still a part of, like, this, like, colonialist arm that is, you know, built to make us conform with our current society and capitalism. But also, there's some really good people there who have been speaking up for the people, and I really appreciate that, and I think we're pretty lucky about that here in Portland.
Yeah, and everyone truly has their specialty. And when I'm talking about local government, I want to really be really specific. I'm talking about our city councilors in Portland because that's who I go and, you know, cover their council meetings, and I see them frequently. And they all have their different specialties. And what I have noticed is that they will stand up for the common good in accordance with what they feel like they're most educated about.
Mm.
So like in particular, Councilor Mitch Green is well versed in economics and will stand up economically for the common good. Like Councilor Murillo is on the ICE facility and making sure that there's accountability there. And you know, she is an immigrant and mm-hmm. has an extensive wealth of knowledge on the topic. So, like empowering our counselors to lean into their strengths for the common good is what essentially is our role as the citizen.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that I've noticed is like kind of knowing your counselor, because if your counselor doesn't feel confident in like a specific domain, it's really unlikely that they'll say something about it. So we as a citizen either have to like educate them so they feel confident, or we have to lean into the strengths that they already have, because like they're people. Like, I mean, think about how hard it is for you all to, you know, feel confident talking about something you don't know much about or have much experience with. It's really tough. So that's like a little thing that I've noticed that might be useful to you all.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Julia.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Really quick, before we move on to our news, mm-hmm. Did you already say what the high is going to be today?
Oh, I don't even know if I got into the specifics. I was just like, guys, it's really hot. So we're going to have a high of 75 and a low of 44. And it's going to pretty much be sunny through, it looks like, Friday is what they're projecting. And maybe we'll get some rain this weekend. But you never know with this time of year. But I feel confident that it's going to be hot today. So if you want to, like, put your cactus outside, today might be the day. You never know when you might need to, you know, lob a cactus at someone. You need it nice and spiky.
Whoa.
Actually, no. I'm not perpetuating violence with cacti. Mm-mm.
Yeah, you gotta take care of your cacti.
Yeah.
No violence against the cacti.
Peace for the cactus. Peace for the people.
Seriously. All right. So, Julia.
Yeah.
You've brought us a lot of news today.
Yeah.
What do you got?
So, there are some significant moves being made right now, because I know we've been talking about it for a long time, but that $106 million found in the Housing Bureau still has not been formally allocated. It's hit the city council agenda multiple times. It's been delayed multiple times. The committee structure changed. There was a protest at council, which caused everyone to go online and then delay the topic. So here we are. And Wednesday morning, again, that housing money is on the city council agenda. That is, if it can make it past committee on Tuesday. Yes, the committees are back, sort of. We'll get to that a little bit later. But there will for sure be a committee on Tuesday on housing. And there, for those of you who listen to our show regularly, you will know that we have a local co-op housing organization called Oregon Cooperative Housing Network. And co-op housing potentially might be brought up at committee on Tuesday. Garland Woodsong, the director of the network, has presented co-op housing to our city councilors, and they may factor in co-op housing as a piece of the housing crisis puzzle, as a piece of the solution. This week, like I said, council is deciding what to do about some of those millions of dollars they found unspent in the Housing Bureau. Excuse me, just a moment.
Unspent.
Need some water.
Oh yeah, drink some water. You know? I highly encourage everyone out there listening to drink some water. As it's unusually warm,
yep,
turns out we need more hydration.
Yep. Or you'll just evaporate. Anyway, The city can decide to keep funding the status quo. So essentially keep issuing vouchers. And I don't know. You guys have kind of probably gathered a vibe on how that's going. They also can invest.
I haven't. What's the vibe?
Oh, well, the vibe is that the voucher system is highly bureaucratic and people are having huge issues even filling out the forms. And especially like being unhoused is an incredible struggle just to survive day to day, and filling out all these forms to gain access to housing, proving that you have an address, etc., is it's just a huge barrier. And then on top of it, the money went unspent for some of those vouchers. So clearly there isn't an accountability system built into this. So at the very least, they would have to build an accountability system for the way that they're doing things. But the other option is that they could try something new. And one of those options is to invest in co-op housing. That means that the city could use funds from the Housing Bureau to buy up existing housing and vacant properties and construct or convert homes into co-ops. And just to recap, co-ops allow people to invest in their community co-op and own their home through a share of the co-op. So it's, you would co-own with a group of people. Essentially, a person owns a share that is proportional to the size and location of the unit. The limited equity part of co-op means that the house's value increases proportional, not to the housing market, but instead proportional to the median income of the area that the co-op is in. That means that co-ops will always be affordable to the majority of people. That also means that you can't get priced out of your home if you live in a co-op. So if you've dug co-ops and you may even want to live in one, you can testify Tuesday at the Housing Committee and Wednesday at City Council. And there will be a link in today's show notes to a brief co-op overview and a testimony guide from the Oregon Cooperative Housing Network. Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, we've been following this for a pretty long time, the co-op opportunity. We know it's been done successfully in Eugene and also for decades in New York, and it's really cool that it might.
Yeah, you can hear a longer interview with Garland Woodsong, too.
That was literally just last week.
Oh, yeah. Well, last week and also last year.
Yep.
There's like a 10-minute interview last week, right? And then like a half-hour interview from a little while ago, also on co-op housing with Garland Woodsong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to that in the archives if you want. That was definitely an interesting conversation. Yeah, I think it could be a really, really powerful solution if it's funded. One small point of clarification. When you say if you've dug co-ops, do you mean you like, do you like co-ops?
If you've liked the co-ops, yeah.
Okay, hell yeah.
Not if you've dug a hole.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. A lot of people probably have.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
All right. So, what's next?
Well, we also have a brief update from what's going on with recycled living.
Yeah.
So I went in and talked to Charlie as they were taking the next step in the process to put together building materials from recycled plastics.
Amazing. Take a listen. We'll be right back.
Woo! Plastics heavier than it looked.
In total, it was 4,000
pounds. On Thursday, April 2nd, I went to Cultivate Initiatives with Charlie from Recycled Living to check in on where they're at with putting together plastic panels to use as construction material for tiny homes around Portland.
Yes. We took 4,000, but they wanted us to take 16,000.
Whoa.
Which then we would have had to been doing this to 16,000.
You want to tell us what you're doing right now?
As they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure. We are moving our plastic, our previous workspace, into a new one. We're in the middle right now of building the machine that's going to recycle this plastic into building materials to support different housing solutions in Portland. We're going to be building the oven for the new recycling machine this weekend with the volunteer engineers that are a part of Recycled Living, and doing some more experiments to see if we can be a part of a new Safe Rest Village construction happening this summer and use some of these recycled plastic materials in their village design.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, a lot of behind the scenes stuff at the moment, all just different people who care about this trying to figure it out together. And it's fun when you got other people to do it with.
Yes. And can you tell me more about this plastic? Where did this plastic come from?
The plastic that we're currently sorting and putting into storage containers came from a plastic injection molding facility just outside of Portland. We took about 4,000 pounds of plastic from them that was going to be sent to the landfill with hopes to recycle it into building materials. The plastic is industrial waste plastic, so it's nothing that we would see as consumers, and it's nothing that we would even know exists. But regularly, just one factory is shipping tens of thousands of pounds of plastic to the landfill because there's no option for it. So what we're hoping to do with it is create a new alternative from the landfill.
Recycled Living is a volunteer-led organization that transforms industrial plastic waste into recycled building materials. Their mission is to design better housing for transitional housing communities in Portland. They have an innovative approach. They want to tackle two core objectives: plastic recycling and supporting our unhoused neighbors. And they do that through one single united solution.
All right, so if that wasn't the grooviest update. But yeah, that was Charlie from Recycled Living. We actually had a pretty great time. They were moving so much plastic, pounds and pounds and pounds of plastic in a U-Haul, and moving that to a new location where they were going to melt it down to the panels to potentially construct some porches for a new tiny village in Portland, which is really exciting.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shared this this photo here with me, and looks like a lot of plastic. Can you describe what's going on in this photo?
Yeah. So in this photo, Charlie and an employee of Cultivate Initiatives that Recycled Living partnered with are moving these huge bags of plastic pellets. These plastic pellets are probably the size of a grain of rice. And they're in a box like twice the size of a refrigerator almost. And these plastic materials are being shipped to landfills like that. And they're just left there. And as they were moving, I gotta say, as they were moving the plastic was like kicking up. So there's particles of all different sizes in there. So not only are they eliminating pellet plastic waste, but also microplastic waste.
Wait,
panels.
Wait, okay. So where does this plastic come from?
It comes from industrial factories. So industrial factories are producing thousands of pounds of plastic waste. Every week.
Like making plastic products.
Making plastic products.
And then they melt it down and turn it into pellets?
And as they're cutting, you know, plastic, whatever sure. plastic thing okay. they're doing, there's just tons of, like, you know, the outside of the plastic mold or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just gets ground up into pellets so they
it's
can transport
wild to
it easier.
Me that they don't use that.
Reuse it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess that's what Charlie's doing, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm sure it has something to do with, like, efficiency or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And and a lot of plastics, too, they are they're part of the oil process. So, you know, plastic comes from oil. So there's, as we're drilling oil, people are also manufacturing plastics. All of that is tied together. So there, I'm sure there just are
shipments of more plastic. Like, the plastic isn't necessarily running out, so it's more efficient just to get more plastic, cut it up, and then throw the thousands of plastic pellets into the landfill. And like Charlie said, we would never really see that, except for that he's going to these factories and finding the plastic, intercepting it before it goes to landfill, wow. and repurposing it.
Right on.
With a U-Haul. Of all things, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You just use what you can. All right, so let's get into what's happening at City Council. Last Wednesday, City Council voted to give small businesses a boost. So folks are sometimes pretty critical of the current sitting council, that they aren't supporting small business enough. And I do have to say, this is one vote that contradicts that, you know? This is really significant. And that is that during the next tax year, so 2026 and 2027, they are going to, small businesses will get a exemption from $50,000 starting in the tax year 2026, and then $75,000 in the tax year 2027, back to small businesses during tax season. So this allows small businesses, they're projecting about 4,200 small businesses to get back, money that they paid in taxes to then reinvest in their small business. They made these estimations from tax year 2023 data, and, a lot of these businesses that are getting this tax relief, 65% of them to be exact, are running their business essentially by themselves. So that this update to tax code has not changed since 2007. So this is pretty huge. A lot of other cities have this type of tax relief for small businesses. And the hope is that this tax relief will put Portland on par with other innovative cities. Council is also trying to figure out how they want their committees to function. This is what I was saying when I was like, we have committees, they're back, sort of. There is debate at council if there should even be committees. This was brought up by Zimmerman, Councilor Zimmerman. Because the council structures were, or the committee structures were so overwhelming in the first place. And now they've limited it down to 5 committees from formerly 8, which is an improvement to many councilors. But they're still debating they're fine tuning the elements of those committees to such a degree that Zimmerman was like, well, maybe we shouldn't even have committees. And what they were debating is, you know, the way that topics get onto the city council agenda is that they're brought up in committees. And in those committees made up of councilors, they vote to have something go onto the city council agenda. Mm-hmm. So case in point, co-op housing. Mm-hmm. Co-op housing is going to the housing committee Tuesday. A councilor will present co-op housing to the committee and say, hey, I think this is valuable. I think we should look into this, maybe vote for this to happen, and maybe funds be allocated to it. And then if the other councilors agree, they vote, yes, let's put this in front of the entire council. If they don't vote for it, it's considered dead in committee. There are many things that die in committee that are really important to councilors. And sometimes things are brought up in committee where a counselor isn't a part of that committee, but they're passionate about the thing that was brought in committee and died in committee. So they wanted, this was discussed during the council meeting on Wednesday, they want there to be the ability for 4 counselors to agree that a subject brought up in committee that died in committee, if there's 4 counselors that agree that that should go in front of the city council agenda, regardless of who's sitting on the committee, then it should then go onto the council agenda, which is getting really like hairy and I'm sure that was like kind of hard for y'all to follow to some degree.
I think I got it. I think you explained it really well.
Thank you.
So like any four people out of the city council can bring something to council, like the full council, to discuss. Mm-hmm. Because basically things are dying in committees that other council members that are not in that committee really care about.
Yes.
Which makes sense, but is also kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, governance is
sounds really
hard.
Really difficult.
Yes.
To figure out, for sure. And like figuring out a new system, yeah, it's gonna take time. But yeah, that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Like, having observed so many city council meetings, like, do you think this is gonna slow things down? Do you think it's like good? Do you think that people should be on more committees? Do you think there should be less committees? What's your thoughts?
I really think that this committee topic is all wrapped up in us just having a new form of government.
Yeah.
On the local city council level. I talked to the city attorney, Robert, and the city clerk, and I asked them, you know, what's going on with committees? And they were even like, I don't know what's going to happen. I was like, is there precedent for this? Are there other cities that have gone through this where we can kind of have a case study? And they said it really varied city to city, and that, yeah, not having committees at all is an option, and it's really up to each of our counselors. Hmm. I don't know. I just seeing how council functions, I personally don't think that not having committees would be a good idea, because as it is, they're kind of the topic about how they should run committees went for so long. Mm-hmm. That you have to almost limit how many people are in a group for decisions to be made faster. And everyone wants to be able to say their piece when it's all 12 of them. So, and that's good, but it's just like, it's a human thing, you know? If you have more people are talking, it takes more time. Limit the amount of people, make a decision, let that go to the full group, make a vote. That makes sense to me. I think not having committees will slow things down significantly. Mm-hmm. Or topics just won't be heard.
Right, that makes sense.
And it also is like committees are kind of a door for citizens to bring forward ideas that could potentially get to council, which I think just approaching council with the topic is more intimidating.
Yeah.
So it might be an accessibility thing as well, which accessibility was a huge thing in the conversation on Wednesday last week.
Yeah, I think the idea of committees makes sense. And I do think that it makes sense that people should be able to bring something forward if there's enough people that want to talk about a topic.
Yeah.
That was otherwise abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that brings us to information on what's happening with the ICE facility. Every week that there is a council meeting, City Administrator Lee gives an update on the ICE facility, which I've come to really appreciate that they're so dedicated to keeping us informed on this.
We have definitely made it very clear that we all want to know exactly what's happening. So I do appreciate that.
That is so true. I'm sure that they were definitely influenced by how vocal that activists are in the city. So it's freaking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I do appreciate them for actually noticing.
Yeah.
Like many city councils.
And this is how government is supposed to work, y'all. You can listen to the citizens. You do the thing that they asked for because you're representing them. This is representative democracy.
They're not totally doing it yet, but this is definitely a step.
This is, and they're not totally doing it because they're doing government things, which is that there's a appeal that has been denied. The Stuart Lindquist, the property owner, appealed the city's decision to uphold the violations to the city code hearings office, which means now
Stuart Lindquist will have a hearing that is in May. That is in May 5th, 2026. And you can actually attend that hearing because it's public. And there's a Zoom link you can go to attend that hearing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to attach the link to this hearing onto the description for this show.
Fantastic. Yeah, up to this point, it has been stressed that council has no authority over the ICE facility and the decision around enforcing the fees related to their land use violations. So it was very surprising to all of us present at council on Wednesday when the city administrator said that after there's a decision made at the hearing, that the issue could go in front of council. Councilor Murillo inquired with the city attorney on the record about what this could mean for the issue to be presented to council and by what route it would arrive in front of council. The city attorney, Robert, said that the city administrator, Lee, could recommend the topic to the council agenda, but that the conversation needed to be discussed in an executive session, which is when they basically are saying, you know, we need to be really strategic with this, so we're going to have a private conversation about this to figure out the legality, et cetera. And then we could see, like, kind of figure out how this is going to go in front of council and what that means for council. This would be a highly politicized decision if it's brought in front of council. So that's definitely something that we'll be keeping our eye on. I don't quite understand why it wouldn't, you know, the decision wouldn't be made in circuit court and that be the end of it. Like the legal system taking care of this violation, they might backtrack on it going in front of council. But at this point, it might be politicized on council if it if there's a decision made on the during the hearing and then it goes to council. So might be a good idea just to stay on your toes with your current representatives on council.
Yeah. It looks like this hearing has been canceled.
No.
So I don't know what that means because I haven't done enough background research on this yet. But that could mean that it has been moved to a different date, or that could mean that somebody decided not to show up or something. Not really sure. We'll have more information for you at some point soon. So much for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be at council on Wednesday and City Administrator Lee is going to have his update on the ICE facility. So hopefully he'll bring up why the hearing has been canceled. But there have been significant delays all the way through this whole entire process. So
yeah.
Just bringing it back to you saying that, you know, there hasn't been a ton of follow through. This is just another situation where like things get delayed or canceled during a sticky process.
And you can also watch City Council online if you can't be there in person. And when in the council meetings does this announcement about the ICE facility usually happen?
So the council meeting agenda is usually 15 and 20 minutes of public testimony, and then there's about 5 minutes of the city administrator update. And it's if you're watching the recording, and it's not live, it can be pretty challenging to find that little piece of time in there.
But it's right
but
after
it would go
public
to like
testimony.
25 minute, the 25 minute mark, and you nice. Probably will be close.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate those updates on the ICE facility.
Yeah. I have a few pieces here on AI, particularly because PPB is requesting grant funding from PBOT to pay police overtime and to invest in surveillance technology, among a few other things. And one of those pieces of technology is called Celebrite. Celebrite is an Israeli-based company that police can use to extract data from your phone. And then that
data is analyzed and it produces a report that includes a map of everywhere you go, who you communicate with, and even shows data you may have deleted.
Wow.
So, yeah. Celebrite can pull text messages, including deleted ones, call logs and contacts, photos, videos, and audio files, GPS and location history, social media and messaging app content from WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, Signal, etc., browser history and search terms, and encrypted app data in some cases. Counselor Murillo actually brought up that this is a topic that councils should potentially consider. Like, how much do we want our police bureau investing in surveillance technology? And this isn't a conversation that just Portland is having. They're having different councils, city councils around the nation are having this conversation because police are increasingly investing in these types of surveillance technology.
Yeah, this is like everything.
Is everything.
That's all of it.
Yeah. There was a case that Murillo brought up of Celebrite being used by police and they with a 19-year-old's phone. And this 19-year-old thought that like only information like pertaining to whatever they were investigating was going to be pulled from their phone. And it was actually everything was pulled from their phone, which is a huge privacy violation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Wow, interesting. It makes you think that there would be protections.
Well, we don't have a lot of those in regard to AI. Yeah. The city itself is piloting a project with Copilot, Microsoft Copilot, because they found that government, people who work for our government, were just using Copilot and other AIs anyway. And so they said, you know, instead of just giving these AIs data, you know, willy-nilly and not really tracking anything, we'll just have everyone use the same type of AI and see how they're using it. So our government is trying to figure out what they're going to do about AI, but it's kind of still feels somewhat of an afterthought. I was thinking just this morning that I was kind of surprised that we don't have a committee on technology at this point, like technology and AI, because it is such a huge part of our lives. On the national level, there has been some waves from an AI safety leader resigning from Anthropic. Anthropic is the company that created the Claude AI, and it was formed by people who left OpenAI because they were critical of the way that OpenAI was doing safety and privacy protections for their users. So they left OpenAI, they created Anthropic, and they were, you know, championing safety in AI. They were investigating how it's going to change our society. However, even at Anthropic, things look dicey. And that is evidenced by this AI safety leader, Sharma, left Anthropic and shared his resignation letter on X. You can read their entire resignation letter. Among other things, Sharma monitored AI sycophancy, so that's when the AI caters to you and what you want. They investigated bioterrorism and internet transparency. His final project before his resignation was on understanding how AI assistance could make us less human or distort our humanity. And his reasoning for leaving Anthropic is summed up in the following direct quote from his resignation letter that says, "I've repeatedly seen how hard it is to truly let our values govern our actions."
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that definitely points to something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The guy who left OpenAI is now leaving Anthropic because they have the same problems, most likely.
Yes. Yeah, this guy is basically the CEO of safety at supposedly the most safe AI. And he's leaving and saying, "This we still aren't following through on what should be the next right action using AI." So from the local with government and AI to the national stage with AI, we have a lot of challenges in front of us.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Thank you for all of those updates, Julia.
Yeah.
We're going to go to public news service and we'll be right back for some upcoming events and some upcoming concerts. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
News service Monday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. Iran said Monday it would retaliate forcefully if President Trump carries out his threat to strike Iranian power plants and bridges unless Tehran ends its chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz. Both countries appear to stand on the precipice of what could become a new phase in the month-old war. The New York Times notes an Israeli strike overnight, Monday, killed the intelligence chief for the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps in the latest killing of a senior Iranian leader. And as the war continues, some labor unions in Pennsylvania are mobilizing to speak out against it. Members of UE Local 667 in Pittsburgh, which represents workers at the East End Food Co-op, says they're expanding anti-war and what they call anti-imperialist organizing. Union President Fritz Geis says their activism targets the war in Iran, but interest grew after October 23, when the war in Gaza began.
We all know food is political. We decided to endorse the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement by starting a campaign to remove Israeli-sourced products from our shelves until or unless Israel ends all wars and occupation.
Guy says the union's eastern region has passed a resolution urging members to join protests, partner with anti-war coalitions, and press elected officials for action. Meantime, Virginians will soon decide whether to join what's become a nationwide redistricting fight as voters cast ballots on a referendum to redraw congressional boundaries mid-decade. The referendum asked voters whether they want to amend the Virginia Constitution to allow new congressional districts before the next census in 2030.
Then, after the census, Virginia would revert back to its standard bipartisan redistricting. Corinne Charles Dongo, with Virginians for Fair Elections, says the effort is meant to counteract a slew of Republican states that have redrawn their district maps to favor the GOP, including Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas.
It's about playing fair, and you can't have other states doing mid-decade redistricting and for Virginians not to respond, because Virginians can't bring a stick to a knife fight.
Opponents of the referendum argue the ballot question's reference to restoring fairness is misleading, and that redistricting would only help Democrats rig elections in the Commonwealth. I'm Simone Perez.
And Michigan lawmakers have advanced a new online child safety package of bills as a California jury last week found Meta and Google libel in a $6 million youth harm case.
The Michigan plan includes the Online Safety Act for Kids, the Kids Code, and Safe for Kids Act, aimed at limiting addictive features, boosting privacy, and giving parents more control of their kids' online access. John DeMay, a West Michigan father and advocate, says his 17-year-old son Jordan died by suicide in 2022 after being targeted on Instagram, coerced into sending explicit images, and then extorted.
Jordan quickly realized that the young lady that reached out to him on Instagram was actually an adult male from Nigeria.
Crystal Blair reporting.
This is Public News Service. Tomorrow ends a federal scoping period that could result in new oil and gas drilling near New Mexico's Chaco Cultural National Historic Park.
The Department of Interior opened a week-long public comment window on April 1st on plans to revoke Biden-era protections that prohibit new mineral development in the greater Chaco region. Currently, 336,000 acres surrounding the park in the state's northwest corner are protected from drilling. Maud Dinan with New Mexico's National Parks Conservation Association says historically 30 to 60 days have been allowed for public comment.
So 7 days is quite a stark contrast. It's also over one of the holiest weeks that many interfaith communities are celebrating this week.
Christians celebrated Easter on Sunday, and the Jewish observance of Passover continues through April 9th. I'm Roz Brown.
Next, a Georgia nonprofit is training young people to become health advocates in their own communities. Public health schools teach data and research,
but they don't always teach things like how to pass a bill to make a greater impact.
That's why Jonathan Carey, a Morehouse School of Medicine public health student, joined Black Health Cares. Through the program, he spoke before the South Fulton commissioners to support a new hospital in Union City.
Being someone who is more so in the policy space, I was actually able to learn real time what it's like to pass bills and what advocacy actually looks like on the ground when we're advocating for equality across all care, whether it's healthcare or public health.
Carey says the fellowship has expanded his network and grown his advocacy toolbox. Black Health is part of a growing network of culturally focused health advocacy programs across Georgia. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Finally, cattle on California dairy farms produce huge amounts of manure, which releases methane gas into the atmosphere. Now a new study looks at leaks in the digester systems meant to capture and repurpose that gas.
Researchers from the University of California, Riverside, find that digester systems capture methane effectively but must be monitored for leaks because even temporary failures can release massive amounts of the potent greenhouse gas. Study author and UCR climate scientist Alyssa Valdez says when a digester covers a waste lagoon, it acts like a giant balloon.
It does a great job of capturing all of that methane. But when it leaks, you might see more methane than you accounted for. And those leaks, unwatched and unregulated, can pose a real large problem.
The digesters are designed to funnel the captured methane into natural gas pipelines. The study recommends that going forward, aerial observation should be combined with on-the-ground measurements to make sure digester systems are in good working order. I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for starting your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That was Public News Service. Now we're going to go to your weekly jazz calendar. We'll be right back.
Hello, X-Ray listeners, and welcome again to Jazz in Portland. I'm Tom Skelly, filling in for Thomas Smith, letting you know about some events for the week of April 6th. Monday, April 6th at Arrivederci, 17023 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard, Walker Laws and Holt Mess Jazz, 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, April 7th at 13th Moon Gravity Well, 4513 Southeast 41st Avenue, Sophia Bornstein 6-8 Trio, featuring Sean Beal and Ron Steen, 8 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, April 8th, at Nassau Wine Bar, 1744 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, Shelley Rudolph and Dan Gill Day for Swang Chanson Vintage Jazz, 6 p.m. At Joe Bar and Rotisserie at Papa Haydn, 715 Northwest 23rd Avenue, Trio Femme, Annie Avere with Sophia Tardy and Laura Kennard, 7 to 10 p.m. Thursday, April 9th at the 1905, 830 North Shaver Street, Leon Cotter Quartet with Greg Gobel, Noah Mortola, and Garrett Baxter, 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. Friday, April 10th at Wilf's, 800 Northwest 6th Avenue at Union Station, Heather Kaiser and Steve Christofferson, 7 to 9:30 p.m. Saturday, April 11th at Burlingame Space, 8423 Southwest Terwilliger Boulevard, the Paula Byrne Quartet, 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday, April 12th at Nicoletta's Table, 333 South State Street, Suite M, Lake Oswego, Clay Guyberson, Piano and Voice, 6 to 8 p.m. Stay tuned for more info on Jazz in Portland and streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Thanks for listening. Enjoy Portland music.
Welcome back to the Commons. That was your weekly jazz calendar. Before that, you heard the Public News Service. And then we had some news updates from Julia. Next up, we're going to talk about some upcoming events. So about a week ago or so, a little over a week ago, was the March 28th No Kings. In a similar sort of vein, we're going to have couple big protest days here in Portland. On May 1st, there's going to be a Day Without an Immigrant put on by Picun, And this is Oregon's Farm Workers Union, which is calling for this series of general strikes that center and empower immigrant workers in this time when many folks are afraid to leave their homes. So the last one was on April 1st, and the next one will be on May 1st. And they're asking for solidarity and joining and standing with farm workers and immigrant workers across the state. It will also be International Workers' Day, or May Day, on May 1st. And many unions and community organizations are calling for no work, no school, and no shopping. There will be, 1:30 cultural events, and I believe a rally at 3:30. There's definitely lots to be done there. It's going to be a big day. In other news, FFAP recently closed their bargaining, which was exciting. They 80%, 88% of eligible members participated in a vote to ratify the agreement, and 98% of those 88% voted yes. So they won pretty significant cost of living, or COLA increases. Management hopes to apply 2% to the current paychecks, and if not, they will apply that to the next one. They will also apply 2% to the next paychecks in June, and then they're going to calculate a 2% COLA for everyone for April 3rd onward, and they're going to have a 3% COLA, which will show up in September and October paychecks, and onward, of course. So this is exciting. They were really fighting really hard for a cost of living increase, as the president had a 2.5% COLA, and they had they kept getting offered .03. It was so small. It was insane. So big kudos to these folks for standing strong and striking for 3 weeks. It was a long strike. But they definitely worked hard for their wins, and they built a lot of community support in the process. Also in similar union news, DSA is having their general meeting on April 12th at Haber Space at 2 p.m. They'll be talking about report backs from that PCC strike, a recent victory of PSU student workers unionizing, a training on canvassing, and some talk on the war in Iran. So there's some upcoming events for you. There is also some music coming to town, as per usual. One of the most exciting things, I think, is that David Byrne will be playing at the Keller Auditorium tomorrow, Tuesday, April 7th, and he will be performing his latest album. And this is a song off of that album. It's called Everybody... That's not what this one is. Okay. This is Who Is This Guy?
The first song on the record.
Oh man, that was actually David Byrne talking about his album, which is not what I was going for. So give me a sec. I'm gonna cue up this song.
Real quick on the topic of DSA, there was the DSA forum in New York that recently happened, and at that forum, at that forum, AOC said no more funding for weapons for Israel, offensive or defensive.
Whoa.
Yeah, this is a new stance for her.
Yeah, this is a very new stance.
And honestly, very politically courageous. She's a very strategic politician. And so she used her uses her communication like really well, so she can get along with other people and actually make moves in government. And she's ready to make this one. Mm-hmm. And I across the political spectrum, people have really started critiquing how much money that we send to Israel mm-hmm. for their weapons, because they are a totally different country and they are a wealthy nation. So the argument is that they could pay for their own weapons. Mm-hmm. And that really does hold up. And it's great to see a Democrat actually coming forward and saying, no more funding for Israel's weapons, offensive or defensive. So shout out to AOC for making that move.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And if that is the kind of thing that you appreciate your politicians doing, you can always like follow up with them and give them any kind of feedback that you'd like.
Sweet. Nice work, AOC. All right, this is David Byrne. Everybody Laughs. We'll be right back.
Everybody laughs and everybody cries. Everybody lives and everybody dies. Everybody eats and everybody loves. Everybody knows what everybody does. Everybody's going through the changes. Every complication. What you say with gesture and expression. In my imagination. Every mobile phone, in every restaurant, everyone we know, and everything you want. Everybody wonders what you're gonna do. Everything is closer, everything is true. Everybody's starting everything again. Everybody's outside now, they're coming in. Everybody's going through the garbage, looking for inspiration. Some will find it staring at the ceiling of the subway station. Everyone you love, in every kind of way, everything you know, and every single face. Every change of heart, and every saving grace. Every song we sing, and every kind of place. Everybody sees, everybody's asking, everybody please. Everybody's going everywhere at once, everybody's backside, everybody's front.
That was Everybody Laughs off David Byrne's new album that he will be playing at, oh geez, where is he gonna be playing?
The Keller Auditorium.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Once a place is big enough, it just goes into the big concert file in my brain, and yep. I'm like, I don't know, one of the big ones.
Yeah,
I won't be going.
Yeah,
but I like it.
Yes.
Anyways, thanks so much for listening this Monday and hanging out with us. Just to like kind of recap the morning, we listened to Wings this morning, and then we had Street Roots Radio from last week, which is released every Wednesday morning at 8:45 a.m. You can listen to it on X-Ray. You can also listen to it on any of your like normal podcast platforms. And then we listened to a little bit of news from Julia, a lot about city council this week. And then you heard public news service and our weekly jazz calendar and a little bit about upcoming concerts.
And just a reminder that you can go to committee on Tuesday and testify, as well as city council on Wednesday.
Sweet. Thank you for that reminder. And you're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland, at 91.1 and 107.1 FM. And in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm, where radio is yours. We've got a little bit of music for you to play us out, and then you'll be off to Tom Hartman. But yeah. Thanks so much for listening to Monday morning's edition of X-Ray in the Morning, The Commons. We're your hosts. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I am Julia Moore. We are a volunteer-run radio show, and we want your contributions and tips. You can text us into the station at 971-220-5979, or you can DM at The Commons PDX. And tell us about what's happening in your community and how we can get involved.
And thank you so much for listening, of course. Thanks for starting your Monday with us. And you can always tune in and listen to us. When can you listen to us?
Yeah, Monday from 7:30 to 9 a.m. on X-Ray to hear news at the Commons.
Thanks for listening, folks. Hope you have a good week. Take care of your loved ones. Take care of your neighbors. We're all we've got. All right, next up, we've got Tom Hartman. To play us out, we've got Waxahachie. Take care, folks. One, two, three,
four. I wake up feeling nothing, camouflage the way from the sky. I sit at my piano, wonder the wild river. Drank the water and the lilacs died, and the lilacs drank the water, marking the slow, slow, slow passing of time. I get so angry, baby, at something you might say. I dream about an awful stranger, work my way through the day. I run it like a silent movie. Run it like a violent song. Run it like a voice compelling. So right, it can't be wrong. I'm a broken record, riding in the dustbin. I feel myself back up like I used to do. And if my bones are made of delicate sugar, I won't end up anywhere good without you. An urgent thought to spend silence in the gold. I run it like the crop of kismet. I run it like a dilettante. I run it like I'm happy, baby, like I got everything I want. I'm a broken record, riding.
need your love too. And the lilacs drank the water. And the lilacs drank the water.
It's going to hit 70 again today. So if you're east of us, and pretty much everybody is, get ready. Some nice weather. Spring is here. Spring has